Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson with our host, best-selling author, highly respected psychologist, and patriot, Dr. James Dobson.
Well, Ryan, I appreciate that title, patriot. Whether it fits or not, I'll leave to somebody else to decide. But it's important to me, and I think it should be to every American. And the greater part of patriotism is being willing to stand up and speak up when you see the nation you love under attack and you see it losing ground morally and spiritually as we are today. So we're going to focus on that today and talk about the God-given liberties and principles for which America has stood for centuries.
Amen. And this is something I've seen laid on your heart time and time again. You have really been called to be a voice for righteousness and religious freedom in our nation.
Well, Ryan, we're about to hear another voice for righteousness from a man that I deeply respect. Mm-hmm. And I wish the whole country knew him and knew the contribution that he has made to our country. His name is Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He's been our guest on several occasions here at Family Talk. And I happen to have been in a meeting of conservatives just recently, several weeks ago, when General Boykin was asked to speak. And what he said was recorded. And I really do want our listeners to tune in to what he has to say, because there was a tremendous response from the audience. Okay. He got a standing ovation, and I think people will see why very quickly. The purpose of the meeting I was attending was to present General Boykin with the George Washington Military Leadership Award. And he graciously stood to receive it. And then he went on to tell a little bit about his deep love for America.
Well, it was truly stirring. And this is a man who, like you, has his finger on the pulse of this nation. Just by way of introduction, General Boykin served 36 years in the Army with great distinction. He's now retired from the military. He was one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force and served 4 years as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. He's also an ordained minister and is now currently serving as an Executive Vice President with the Family Research Council. Finally, in case you don't already have a copy of General Boykin's biography, let me recommend it to you. It's called Never Surrender, and I think that title speaks for itself. So with that, we'll get right to the message from General Jerry Boykin on today's Family Talk.
Ryan, before we hear General Boykin, Never Surrender reminds me of Winston Churchill,
right.
Another hero of mine,
oh, yeah.
Who said, never give up, never, 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 never give up.
That's right.
And General Boykin has said the same thing with his life.
That's right.
You know, I don't mean this to sound like false humility, but, you know, I can, first of all, I'm not a hero, and I really mean that. I wish I was. I always wanted to be. You know, I grew up someday, you know, wanting to be a real hero, and I'm not. But I appreciate everybody saying that, you know, and I really do. And I can think of a number of people that are probably far more deserving of the award than I am, particularly coming from this group. And that's what makes it so special, because there's some of my heroes in here, you know, Dr. Dobson. And listen, it was a real privilege for me to be able to spend 36 and a half years in the United States Army. And, you know, it's important that we remember that there is no constitutional right to serve in our military. This is where our argument got off base on this whole issue of don't ask, don't tell, and the repeal of the don't ask, don't tell. There's no right. There's no constitutional right to serve. It's a privilege, and I was privileged. I was blessed to be able to spend that much time in our military and to be able to serve my country. I am a conservative. I am a three-legged conservative. I believe in all of it. And I'm also a registered Republican, but I'm not sure that I even know what that means anymore, to be honest with you. You see, I'm one who thinks that guys like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee are real heroes. I think when you make a pledge in your campaign and then you live up to that, you do what you said you were going to do, that takes a lot of courage. And some of us in this room, Colin and Tony and others, we were there when they said to the group that was sitting in Mike Lee's office that day, they're going to hate us. Well, we're doing this on principle. We're going to stand on principle. You see, I wish that we had more people that stood on principle in America today. I'm tired of being told, as a true conservative, that I need to stop talking about social issues, that I need to leave that behind. It's about getting the party elected. No, it's not about getting the party elected. It's about saving America. You know, I've been a blessed man all my life, not because I grew up with a lot, because I didn't. And many of you have heard me talk before about where I got my values from, who my hero is. And I'm going to tell you about him again tonight because it was my dad. A man that grew up on a tobacco farm in eastern North Carolina. One of 10 children, his father and mother were sharecroppers. They had nothing. Never owned a piece of land in their lives. And at 17 years and 1 month old, he went to the Navy recruiter and enlisted in World War II as a Navy radarman on the 6th of June. And by the way, he went in to, among other things, join his four brothers that were already serving in the European theater. He dropped out of school in the 10th grade in order to do that. Never got a high school diploma. 6th of June, 1944, as he was driving a landing craft ashore at the beaches of Normandy, he took a direct hit. He's not sure whether it was a round from a German gun or whether they actually hit a mine. All he knows is that he woke up in Walter Reed or Bethesda Naval Hospital and he was blind in his left eye, but it didn't matter. He had done his duty. He took a discharge and came back to the tobacco farm in North Carolina, married his sweetheart, and began to raise his family until the Korean War started. And then the Army said that they would take him, even though he was blind in his left eye. And he came back in and served through the Korean War. And after that war was over, he left and went back to the tobacco farm. And then the United States Marine Corps offered him an opportunity to come to work as a civil servant. And he spent 32 years as a civil servant, including a tour in Vietnam and other parts of the world with the U.S. Marine Corps for 32 years. See, he loved America. He was proud of the fact that he served America. He took an oath to the Constitution. He said, I do solemnly swear that I'll support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. He loved this country. Even as one of these gray-bearded old veterans, he always stood when the flag came by. When they played the national anthem, he didn't want the people around him to see, but he was emotional because he loved America. He paid a price for America. He loved America. He took that oath three times to support and defend the Constitution. I watched him. I adored him. And I got my values from him. You see, the only thing he ever wanted in return was opportunity. All he wanted was opportunity. He never wanted a handout. He never wanted America to give him anything. And when they finally gave him a disability check, he took it and gave it to his parents because they could no longer farm the tenant farm and they had no place to go and nothing to live on. And he bought them a house with his disability check while we lived in a rented home. See, when his friend's house burned down, he took all the money he had in his pocket and gave it to him when he could barely pay his own bills. But he believed that it was his responsibility to take care of his mother and father, not the government's. He believed it was his responsibility to take care of his neighbor, not the government's. He believed that God would provide. You see, he loved God and he loved America with all his heart. I adored him. He was my hero. 10th grade education. See, when his family had left, my brother and sister and I were all gone in this bigoted, racist environment in eastern North Carolina. He no longer had children in the home. He adopted a little black boy. You just didn't do that in Eastern North Carolina at that time. He adopted a little black boy. Little boy's name was Shakif, because he believed that there was nothing worse that could happen to a boy than to grow up without a father, than to grow up without the guidance and the mentoring of a man in the home. 72% of those black children that are born today all over America are without a father in that home. My dad loved America. Where is that America that he loved? Where is that today? See, I was just talking to some other folks tonight. It's not about me anymore. I'm at that transition point where it's not about me anymore. It's about my grandchildren. And what kind of America they're going to know. Will it be the America that my dad left to me? Or will it be a totally different America? Listen, I love this country with all my heart. And I'll do whatever I have to do. I'm beyond worrying about what the media says. Yeah, it would hurt. It was painful. And it still is. That's one of the reasons I work for Tony, is because he actually is the only person I know that gets hammered by the press more than I do. So it makes me feel good. It takes a little pressure off of me. But I'm beyond that now, because it is about my grandchildren. It's about what kind of country my generation is going to leave for them. And my dad left a great country to me. His generation, the greatest generation, they paid a tremendous price that my generation might have a better life than they had. You know, as we look at everything that's happening in this country today, as we become more and more dependent upon government, it can be traced back to the fact that we've lost one thing. And I really mean this. And we've lost the concept upon which America was founded. You see, those founding fathers, they gave us something at the time that was an experiment. It was called a nation built upon unalienable rights, rights that come from God. You see, up to that time, all rights came from the king or the czar or the caliph or the pharaoh. But America was founded on unalienable rights. See, that's what my dad believed in, unalienable rights. God would provide. If he would do his part and follow biblical principles, God would provide. And I grew up with that as the influence in my life. Not to depend on anybody, but God. And today, if you trace the troubles of America, I believe you'll find that it goes back to the fact that we've lost sight of that founding principle, unalienable rights. Because now we've moved to a dependence upon the government, upon man. You see, I go through periods where I'm really down about America, about our future, but I'm up right now. And I'm up because I went to the mall on Sunday and I joined with thousands and thousands of old, grizzly, white, bearded veterans. Some with no legs. In case you haven't seen that photograph of the guy with no legs taking the barrier on his Segway, taking that iron barrier on his Segway. Yeah. And regardless, unless you can produce a photograph, I am not admitting to throwing any of those barricades into the reflecting pool. But I'm encouraged, because as I talk to those people, as people like Congressman Stockman and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Sarah Palin came out to talk to them, they're fired up and they want to do something, and they now are realizing that it's going to take a team effort. We've got to come together. There's got to be unity. There has to be unity for us to save this country. And they're fired up. And they want to know. They're emailing me every day saying, what do we do now, boss? That was good. What do we do now? Where do we go from here? My Facebook is covered with notes. Where do we go from here? What do we do? And as I speak in churches all over America, it's incredible. The number of people that are coming saying, how can I help? Look, don't tell me what the problems are. I see that. I've heard enough. Tell me what to do. How do I get involved? What do I do? You see, the grassroots in America are fired up now because stopping World War II veterans from coming to their memorial was a bridge too far as I'm concerned. And I think that most Americans believe exactly the same thing. They're fired up and they want to know, what position do you want me to play, coach? Put me in, coach. You see, I'm actually optimistic. I think the grassroots is the sleeping giant in America. You see, there's more of us than there are of them. No question. And as I watch these young men and women in our military today, I realize there are still great, patriotic, American-loving citizens in this country. They're willing to step forward. As Isaiah said in 6:8, here am I, send me. And that encourages me to see that we still have a lot of very patriotic Americans serving our country. But we have to protect their rights. And today, the greatest infringement in our military on the constitutional rights of our young men and women are the infringements on their religious liberties. This is a very serious problem, my friends. A very serious problem. And there will be more news breaking about another episode of the infringement on religious liberties. Efforts to identify groups like the Family Research Council and the American Family Association and Catholic organizations as extremists in this country. We're going to stop that with the help of a coalition. We've got a coalition now that we've put together back in June, and it includes a bunch of organizations represented here, that we're going to fight this and we're going to stop this. And ultimately, somebody's head is going to roll over this. And in case you're trying to figure out whether I've got a Christian attitude or not, I don't care what you think. I'm angry, and I will tell you, I will do whatever it takes. As long as Tony Perkins keeps the reins off of me, I'll do whatever it takes to stop the infringement on these religious liberties of our men and women. It's worse than you think. Thanks. Thank you. Folks, we've got a coalition working this with Center for Security Policy and Matt Staver and the Liberty Council folks and ADF and Judicial Watch and the Chaplains Alliance, and I can't even name all the organizations that are involved in this coalition, that we're going to defend the rights of these people that are defenseless. But we have to have unity, and I will tell you that I've learned that there can be unity inside the conservative circles. When you have a passion and you're pulling together, there can be unity. We have to have unity. We have to quit sniping at each other. We have to quit fighting each other. And by the way, if you're not a conservative, go to the Democratic Party. You can be a middle-of-the-road Democrat. They need help. They need that kind of help. They really do. And who am I to tell you that? Well, it's my platform. I have the opportunity to say it. If you're not one of us, go to the Democrats. Seriously. And don't invite me back next year, Bob, if everybody's offended by that. But you either are or you're not. And I'm tired of being told consistently that I've got to shut up about these social issues. And I'll finish with this. I'm going to tell you a final story because we have to have unity. We have to have unity. And I've told this a couple of times before, and you may have heard it, but there's a guy named Frank Brewer that was a Marine aviator. And in January 1982, he wound up at the Armed Forces Staff College, and he discovered that in his seminar was an Army guy that grew up about 35 miles from him. They became instant friends. They spent the whole semester, the whole school year together. And then they parted ways, and they came back together the following summer with their children, and they had a nice summer vacation. And then Frank said to his army buddy, he said, "I'm on my way to Beirut." And he said, "See you after Christmas," to his buddy and his buddy's family. And they parted ways, and on the 24th of October, Frank was en route to 1983. He was en route to Beirut. And all of a sudden, the whole fleet was diverted to a little island down in the Caribbean called Grenada, where Ronald Reagan, when he looked at what the Cubans and the communists were doing and building this airfield down there that would put their bombers and their fighters in range of the American soil, he said, "Not on my watch and not in my hemisphere. You won't build this." And Frank's fleet was diverted in the morning of the 25th of October. All the helicopters took off and took Marines ashore to hit an airfield there. And Frank was the squadron executive officer, so sadly he was left on board the ship with nothing but the maintenance officer. And it was killing him that he had been left behind, but he was the executive officer. And suddenly there was a broad network call that said, "We've got a medevac situation. We've got to have a medevac right away. Can anybody fly? We got a man dying. We got a man hit bad. He's bleeding bad. He may not make it. If we don't get him out right now," Frank turned to his maintenance officer and said, "What do we have left?" His maintenance officer said, "Nothing. They all went to Pearl's Airfield." Frank said, "Nothing?" He said, "Well, we got the old Hangar Queen." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, it's in maintenance." Frank said, "Will it fly?" "No, we can't fly it. It's against the regulation." "I didn't ask you that," he said. "Will it fly?" He said, "Well, yeah, you know, it's in maintenance. We're not supposed to. You'll get in big trouble if you will it fly?" He said, "It'll fly, but you're going to get in trouble if you bring it on deck." He said, "You get in the co-pilot seat. I'll get in the pilot seat. I'll fly it." They brought it out on deck. He fired it up. He got in the pilot seat and he flew in and went to the coordinates where the medevac was. And as they were bringing the man out to put him in his helicopter, he looked down and on that stretcher was his army buddy. But he didn't know it. He didn't know who he was going to get. All he knew was there was an American dying in there. He didn't ask, "Is it a Marine? Is it one of those SEALs? Is he Army?" He didn't ask that. He didn't care about that. It was an American. He didn't say, "Just how much trouble can I get in if I do that?" He didn't ask that question. He was going to save an American. And I'm glad he did, because that was me on the stretcher that day. What if we put aside the things that aren't really that important, and we focused on saving something, that being America. Saving America. If we work together, if we could just come together and be one, just as God said as he looked down at that Tower of Babel, he said, "Those people are unified. They can do anything. Let's go down there and confuse their language." If we're unified, we can do anything. This is a great honor. It's a great privilege to be here with you tonight. God bless you and thank you.
You've been listening to Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin on today's Family Talk. And, Dad, that is a powerful story. When one man stood up, risked his life, and did what was right, he ended up saving General Boykin's life.
Mm. Well, he was calling all of us, Ryan, as American citizens, to take courage and to stand up for truth and righteousness and for religious liberty in the culture, no matter what the cost. And I do hope that our listeners will defend our beloved country.
Well, I hope so too, Dad. And to our audience, are you fired up like we are? If so, tell us about it. Send us a message on Facebook. Let us know you're standing with us, or you can email, you can call us. We would love to continue this tide of patriotism that General Boykin has started today, and then maybe send a donation to Family Talk and show your support. Your contribution is what makes it possible for us to continue to be an influential voice and a force for good in our country. The starting point is drjamesdobson.org. Click on the Donate tab at the top of the page. You can also donate via our Facebook page, our Family Talk app, or when you call us, 877-732-6825. And finally, be sure to sign up for my dad's monthly newsletter. That way you can stay plugged into the important news of the day on matters of faith and family. Sign up when you call, or again, look for the link at drjamesdobson.org. Thanks for joining us today. I trust we've inspired you. And tune in for more trusted advice on issues that affect your family. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.